direction that Gordet had been following. Why'd he jump down into the rill? Doug asked himself. Was he afraid I'd follow him and he's trying to hide his trail? The prints down inside the rill were faint, but still visible. Staying on the surface, Doug followed the rill as it wound across the regolith. It could be dangerous down there, Doug told himself. The rills are old fissures where gas from below ground had seeped out. The ground down there can be brittle as glass, and who knows what's underneath it. Edith trundled along in the tractor, trying to keep its speed down to the pace of a walking man. The trail of boot prints was easy to see, and she didn't want Doug to know she was following him. Not yet. Once she thought she saw the curve of his helmet above the horizon, and she tromped on the tractor's brakes. If I can't see him, he can't see me, she figured. And he sure can't hear me coming after him, not out here in all this vacuum. The nearness of the horizon bothered her. It didn't look right. She knew, consciously, that the moon was only a quarter of the Earth's size, and the horizon was therefore much closer than it would be on Earth. But still, at a deep, primitive level, it almost frightened her. As if there really was an edge to this barren, desolate world, and she might drop off it. Yeah, she told herself derisively, you're right in there with Columbus's crew. Sail on, babe. Sail on. Doug didn't realize he still had the suit-to-suit frequency on until he started hearing strange sounds in his earphones. Gasps? Moans? The sounds came through for a moment, then disappeared, like ghosts vanishing into thin air. Very thin air around here, he told himself. The rill had been getting progressively deeper, sinking more than 4 meters below the crater floor, Doug guessed. It was hard to tell and almost impossible to see if Gordet's boot prints were still marching along down there, even when he leaned carefully over the worn, rounded, smooth edge of the rill to shine his helmet lamp on its bottom. He came to a spot where a meteoroid had slammed into the ground just next to the rill, collapsing its side into a heap of rubble. Doug spent several minutes searching for boot prints. He found none. As far as he could see, there were no prints on the other side of the narrow rill either. And the eerie sounds in his earphones had stopped, too. I've overshot him, Doug told himself. He's back behind me someplace. Down inside the rill, hiding. Slowly, bending over the edge of the rill to examine its bottom, Doug started backtracking. He couldn't see the bottom of the arroyo. It was too deep for his helmet lamp to reach. He stopped and listened. Nothing. Gordet had gone silent. Is he dead? Maybe what I heard was his last gasping for air. With great reluctance and more than a little fear, Doug carefully climbed down inside the rill, lowering himself slowly down as far as he could with his arms fully stretched, then letting himself slide the rest of the way down. He felt the rough side wall grating against the chest of his suit. Couldn't do this in a fabric suit, he thought. The surmet won't tear. But he knew that grinding some dust or larger particles of grit into a suit's joints could immobilize him as thoroughly as the Tin Woodsman caught in a monsoon rain. Doug had never felt the panic of claustrophobia, but as he stood shakily inside the narrow rill, he saw that the sky above him was nothing more now than a constricted slice of stars cut off on both sides by the steep black walls of the arroyo. Like the view from the bottom of a grave, he thought. He took a step forward, and his boot slid on the glass-smooth rock. He had to grab at both sides of the gully to keep himself from falling. Hardly any dust down here, he realized. This rill must be brand new, maybe still active. New and active were relative terms on the moon, he knew. A new rill might have opened up only a few thousand years ago. Its activity might be a slight sigh of underground gas every century or so. A cough. In his earphones, Doug heard somebody cough. Couldn't be anybody but Bam. Slowly, moving cautiously along the slippery rock floor of the rill, both hands extended to touch its steep, confining walls, Doug made his way forward. Another cough, followed by a quick, desperate gasping. Bam! He called into his helmet mic. Bam, where are you? No response. Standing stock still, Doug listened hard. Is he holding his breath? No, it's just so faint I can hardly hear him. Doug pushed along the slick arroyo and the sound of Gordette's breathing grew louder. It sounded strained, labored, as if the man were in pain. "I'm coming, Bam," Doug called again. "I'll be with you in a couple of minutes. Hang on."
"Don't."
Gordette's voice was weak. It broke into a gasping cough. "Save your breath. I'll be there."
"Careful. The ground gives way."
Doug scanned the ground before him in the light of his helmet lamp. It looked solid enough, glassy and slick, but solid rock. Yet he knew this volcanic vent might be no sturdier than a soap bubble. More coughing from Gordette. He must be almost out of air, Doug realized. Got to get to him quickly. The smooth rock floor ended abruptly, like a shattered pane of glass. Black nothingness yawned in front of Doug. And, clinging to the edge of the break like a shipwrecked sailor desperately clutching a piece of flotsam, was the space-suited figure of Leroy Gordette. He had one forearm hooked on the crumbling edge of the precipice and the gloved fingers of his other hand. Doug could see the top of his helmet. "Hold on," he said, and immediately felt foolish. What else was Bam trying to do?
"Don't," the black man warned. "Fucking rock breaks. It's as thin as tissue paper. Brittle, too."
Doug lowered himself to his knees, then got down on his belly and wormed his way toward Gordette.
"Got no purchase for my feet," Bam said, panting. "Every time I try to haul my ass up, fucking rock crumbles more."
"How deep is the hole?" Doug asked. "Can you see the bottom?" Gordette coughed.
"Must go all the way down to Chicago. No bottom."
Inching closer to the man, Doug felt the brittle rock beneath him crack like thin ice. He stretched out his arm as far as he could. "Can you grab my hand?"
"I'm running out of air," Gordette said, gasping. "Forget it. Get out of here." "Grab my hand," Doug insisted. "Can't."
Doug pushed himself a few centimeters closer. A chunk of the rock floor just in front of his helmet gave way and plummeted down into silent darkness.
"Grab it! Leave me alone!"
With gritted teeth, Doug slid closer and wrapped his fingers around Gordette's wrist, just as the edge collapsed into shards and fell away. Through his suit, Doug could feel the vibrations of the servo motors in his glove as they tightened on Gordette's wrist. The man's whole weight dangled from Doug's hand. It felt as if his arm were being wrenched out of its shoulder socket.
"That's a hell of a grip you got," Gordette grunted.
Doug could feel Gordette's body swaying as it hung in the deep black emptiness. Pain burned through his arm and shoulder. The exoskeleton would keep his fingers clamped on Gordette's wrist, he knew. Good thing we're on the moon, Doug thought. With his spacesuit and all, he'd yank my arm right out of my shoulder on Earth. For moments that stretched like years, Doug lay there, flat on his belly, with Gordette hanging in his hand.
"Let me go," Gordette panted. "Let me die."
"If you go," Doug said grimly, fiercely, "I go with you. We're in this together, Bam."
"You crazy."
Doug tried to worm his way back, away from the brittle, crumbling edge of the abyss. Gordette could do nothing to help, even if he wanted to. "Got to haul him out of there," Doug told himself. "Got to get him on solid ground before he runs out of air." But it was almost impossible to edge his way backward with Gordette's dead weight dangling from his outstretched arm. Grunting, teeth gritted, eyes stinging with sweat, Doug inched back along the glassy rock. It was painfully, agonizingly slow. He felt woozy, head spinning.
"What are you all doing down? Oh, my God!"
Edith's voice. Doug couldn't see her, didn't know how she had gotten there, but she sounded like an angel to him.
"Edith, where's the tractor?"
"Right here," she said, her voice anxious, high. "I rode out on it."
"Great. Get the tow cable, quick."
It seemed to take an eternity and a half for Edith to find the tow cable and then clamber down into the rill behind Doug and tie it to one of the attachment rings on his backpack. She used the cable to climb out again, then went up to the tractor.
"Use the winch," Doug called to her. "Controls are on the dashboard."
Edith stared at the dashboard, but couldn't figure out which of the toggles or keypads ran the winch. Instead, she revved up the engines and started backing away, slowly. "Easy, easy,"